Good afternoon and welcome to this session of the JTS. My name is Clyde Jevons. I am your timekeeper for this afternoon. Before we begin the presentations, Asbjørn Strandfors would like to make one or two announcements. Asbjørn.
Thank you. This logo you've just seen will be on the web page for the next 4 years. I'm just told. Till today. Okay, I've got complaints that there is so little information about the Thursday excursion day. So here it comes, and we will post it up on the walls. 9:45, it is wrong on the web. 9:45 below the City Hall. And you have seen the City Hall, haven't you? There is a ferry. And look for the sign, Bygde. We will guide you aboard the ferry, and you will get a day card, an Oslo day card, to show for you at the ferry. And then you can ride bus or tram or whatever and go into the museums as much as you want this day. It's a free Oslo card. This is how the ferries look like, not Titanic exactly. You should be glad for that. This is how it looks like at Bygde. We are going to the Fram Museum, Polar Ship Museum, and this is the Kon-Tiki Museum. This is inside the Fram Museum. We are going to have to be guided around. And there is going to be a lunch there. After we have finished here, and I think about 2 o'clock p.m., then you are free to go back to Oslo by the ferry, or you could take the bus or walk to the Viking Museum. There are lots of museums out there. Quarter of an hour's walk from Fram House to the Viking Museum, you can go to the Bygde Museum, and you can visit the King's Farm. That is, you won't get in, but you can see it. Then, in the evening, there is, at 7 p.m. in the afternoon, there is an event at the Film Institute. There will be lectures about how the film, the Amundsen North Pole film was made. And it's about the restoration, and it's about UNESCO World Heritage. So this is it. We'll post it. Now you are informed. Remember, thank you.
Thank you, Asbjørn. Please now welcome the first speaker this afternoon, who is Jörg Huppert, the Technical Director of CubeTech International, and he will give a presentation on supervision of the analog signal paths in legacy media migration processes. Jörg, the stage is yours.
Good afternoon. I hope you are ready to go with me to a little bit technology, new technology for mass digitization. And you have already heard the title. The title is so long that it was shut and caught in the documentation. So supervision of analog signal paths in legacy media migration process using digital signal processing. So what that will be? The deterioration of carriers and the obsolescence of the playback devices, and the disappearance of experience in old media practice, dictate that we have to be more efficient in migrating our audiovisual heritage. We have to generate digital preservation files, which must be replaced with physical carriers for all future use. So we have to ensure that we don't have any loss of information between the physical carrier and the surrogate file that we generate. That is a problem. We have to find a trade-off of that. And we think that new technology promises to help solving that trade-off between the migration efficiency and the media quality assurance. I'd like to present today three full automatic quality assessment methods, and I'd like to compare the advantage as well as the limits of these three methods. I'd like also to share with you some of the best practice of huge migration projects all over the world. How can a quality measurement help us in mass migration process? We all know old technology and old carriers will have artifacts. To know the artifacts, to know on which position they are, is a good thing. We should take that information and put it in a quality report. But if we plan a migration process, it's much more important to know about the transfer errors while doing the migration process. So if the quality is poor and I can check and listen to the file and see that the quality is poor, how do I know whether it's the physical media which sounds poor or whether it's the playback device which is just degrading my sound? Is the signal retrieval within the tolerance of a used playback device? Are there any transfer errors, static errors or dynamic errors? Can I detect whether the original carrier was produced conform to the standard? If it was not conform to the standard, it's not good for mass migration because it needs special treatment. Are the media aging effects, that forbid to play the carrier right away? I have to know that before I start to take that carrier in a mass migration process. And of course, I have to know whether my collection I want to migrate is homogeneous enough to be ready for mass migration. If my collection is not homogeneous, I will have not that same benefit from technology I can gather with a homogeneous mass transfer. And that is a benefit that a lot of broadcast archives can use against scientific archives, where it's much harder work to do. So I just start similar to the first presentation yesterday from George Blatt. He also looked to the signal path. So what we are interested here is to look to the archive carrier, because at that stage we are, if we want to start with a mass migration process. And at the end, we will come to a digital archive file, which we can secure using hash codes, using data integrity methods on a digital file. But the way between the analog carrier and the digitization is still a part of the migration workflow which is not covered well enough with technology to secure the quality. So what we have to do is to have a signal retrieval, and we have to know whether our signal retrieval is good enough. We have some analog processing in that chain. We have to do the conversion to the PCM data stream. We have to know that the analog digital converter don't make troubles. And we have to generate the archive file. So how can we secure that chain? I like to present three methods. The first is the no reference measure, also called blind error detection. The method is a single-ended error detection method, no reference. It's an objective. It belongs to a family of objective quality assessment methods. It uses a single stimulus and provides a continuous quality evaluation. So what we are doing is we play the audio via the playback device to the digitization system, make the ingest, make an analysis, and evaluate the result of that analysis. The good thing on that process is that it can be parallel, working on more than one machine, and it can even work on a lot of machines in parallel, so that it's good also for preservation factory approach. So what do we find with that method? What type of errors do we detect? So it's a method that is not new. I've presented it 10 years ago in GTS 2000 already. It's on the market. It detects clicks, crackles, buzz, hum, analog overs, we can find the noise floor, can find DC offset, we can measure the maximum levels, the azimuth problems, we can look for the stereo correlation, for the bandwidth of a signal, the dynamic, the average level balance. So there is a lot of errors we can analyze. Also, we can look to digital-borne errors in the transfer, like dropouts, digital overs, clicks, and in analog transfer, digital zeros are also an indication of an error. If we have that method, it's a small step to also use it to content classification, because that can help to interpret the measurements. So this family of quality metrics use a priori knowledge to define a pattern signal which has to be detected within the analyzed signal. Pattern recognition can be used, neural networks can be used. So how does it work? To get an idea, it's a method where you have to define a pattern for each type of error you want to detect. You have to find a signal transformation where the pattern of the error signal is clearly discriminated from the other modulation you want to analyze. Often that signal transformation in a perceptual-based way works best. And if it works not perfect, you will have misidentifications. But misidentification can be false positives. That means the method has detected error pattern, but there are none. And of course, you can have false negative. There are errors, but the method can't find it. So if we want to judge later on the quality of the three methods I want to present, it's good to know which type of errors we detect. So the no reference measure works best. If the error pattern is clearly defined, and has a low variance, and the error pattern differs strongly from the analyzed signal. But that makes it complicated to predict in advance the quality of my error detection. So the strength of that method is it helps to streamline the migration process workflow, as it pointed the operator to critical segments in the analyzed signals. It adds no additional work for the operator. That's a good thing, and it's good for mass migration workflows. But the weakness is it has a lower sensitivity. You can have that false positive, also the false negative, and you have to handle that. That can be time-consuming if it's too much. And it's not very predictable in the quality. So let's look what else can we do if we want to check the quality in a mass digitization process. We can use, if we have a non-reference method, then you can imagine there is also a reference-based measure. It's not only one, it's two I want to present. The first one is I use double ingest. Double ingest? You are not getting ready to digitize your archive when I ask you to do double ingest. So please have a look before you say it's impossible. So this method works similar to what you have seen, but in a second step, you take the same sound carrier and move it to a second machine and do the same ingest again and analyze the difference of the two ingest. Of course, you can't do that directly because you have the speed of the tapes, of an analog tape, will never be perfect. So you have, if you have an hour of a recording, you have a few seconds difference in the length of a signal, even if a machine works perfectly. So you have to have methods, digital signal processing methods, to face the compensate that timing issues. Also, the leveling will not be perfect, and you have to compensate also for that type of errors. But if you do that, then you have the first time a clear definition between the transfer problem and a media problem, because you use the same media, so you know if you have now difference in the two signals, they can't come from your media. It has to come from your signal path. And I think that's a very important and strength information that is helping you to secure your digitization path. So, looking to the strengths, it has a great discrimination between transfer errors and media errors, and you have to see that it's really very important and helpful. You get immediate feedback on transfer problems that can help you in your workflow a lot, so no guesswork. It's a great tool to optimize the analog signal path. It helps you to learn what you can optimize on your playback devices, because you have now a measure that helps you to discriminate very fine between two different machines. So even small temporary interruptions can be detected. For example, small electromagnetic interference, which normally will not be detected with other methods. But it has one big weakness, a huge overhead of doing the whole work twice. And I think that will stop that method from being used widely. So looking to the next method, still not the perfect one, the first not and the second not, so let's look to a third. The third is also a referent-based method. This time, we use a calibration media. Okay. Again, it don't help us very much to get our mass storage digitized if we digitize a test media. But what it helps us is to determine exactly the quality of our analog signal path. So it's a reference-based method using a mathematically well-defined signal. With that method, we can check whether the signal path is standard conform and fully automatic supervise the whole chain. That's the difference from using a standard alignment tape, which you are already doing since ever. So you need that calibration tape, and it's a two-minute tape. Play that through the system. If you have another tape, if you have cassettes or vinyls to digitize, there will also be medias available for that. If you have to go for shellacs, we haven't developed such a media ourselves. We have to modify our method to work with the IIS calibration disk that is already available on the market. So, what test tone sequence can help me in my job? What is on that tape? So, there are tones on it. And if you like, I can play them, and I can ensure you will not like it. But I have a short version of that, so maybe we can go through that. So, am I right? You don't like it? But the computer likes it, because that tones help him to clearly find out what is going wrong in your analog signal path. We can use that, automatically analyze that, and find problems like tape speed derivation. We find a wow and flutter, harmonic distortion, we find TC offset, azimuth, balance problem. If you have wrongly aligned your machine, it stops immediately. It detects in the first seconds that the balance is not okay or it's out of phase or something. You find crosstalk, find your frequency response. The method is clearly defined. There's a mathematically model. It's the standard methods used in the standards you already use to align your machines. So to use that, you have levels and warning level and critical level, so you can adapt that to an in-house standard, the sensitivity, and you get, at the end, feedback of your measure of signal path. So that method helps you to detect transfer errors. It's also a highly sensible measurement. It checks standard conformity, compliance with your in-house quality matrix. It detects low degradation process, even over weeks and months. So if your tape head is degrading or you have problems with alignment of a machine, you can find that very early and very can start your maintenance process even in before if you are with low degradation process involved. It has also weakness. It's a single check, so it's no continuous supervision. The it's not usable for non-standard aligned recordings because there are no measure medias available for that type of machines. It's not a also a problem is that, or it's not a problem, it's standard, that the calibration media will not live forever, so you have to have fresh tapes sometimes a year. So which method is best now? Or is there a way to get the best out of all the three assessment methods to automate your mass migration and get a lot of help and support from a computer? For that, I have done a performance matrix where I try to get the strengths and weakness together. At that point, I think it's also very important to have the operator back in the game, because no migration process will work without an operator, and at the end, the operator is the only one who can find and detect semantic problems in the transfer. So if you have the wrong file and it's not the one you want to digitize, your system will not find that with that three methods I have shown. So you need, no question, you need a human, but you have to find a way how to bring all the strengths of all that technology together to get the best out of the performance and quality. So how can such a workflow look like? So first start with a calibration of your tape. So you ensure that the machines are okay. If one of the machine is not okay, you will not use it. Straightforward. When you start with your digitization using method one, a no reference digitization process, and again look in the evaluation whether there are occurring errors which looks like transfer problems. If you find such errors, then take the same tape again, put it on a second machine, make a new evaluation, and check what the second machine is saying to that tape. If it's saying the same, then it's the problem of a tape or not of your transfer path. So if it's saying a different story and saying getting different evaluation value, then you have a problem. One of the two is not correct, and you can look again to the quality estimation of the first one and find out whether that one is okay, and you can use the second ingest for further storage and archiving. So using that method has also the benefit that you get automatic QC reporting. If you have human-driven ingest, it's a lot of additional work to do QC reporting. Using digital methods, you get that for free. It's part of a process. You have to define it, and you got a very good documentation about your quality of the process. So the three methods I have shown are also valid for video. So there is no principle reason why you can't use that for the video side. So if you use the blind detection for video quality assessment, that's also state of the art, but it's available technology. If you look to the double ingest, that is not state of the art. What you have is full reference based analysis methods, but they have a slightly different approach. They say we have a reference signal and have a processed signal and can define the difference between the two of them. but it's not a big step to bring it also to analysis of the double ingest. Okay, calibration media are also a standard way of aligning video machines, so that is also standard, but to automate that is something that has to be done, and I think it's even same important like on the audio side to do that. So, thank you for listening.
We can probably just take one or two very quick questions if anyone has any. Yeah, down here.
I'd like to raise two points. First of all, I would add to the initial assessment, as Mike Casey pointed out yesterday, that in triaging the materials for the appropriateness for mass digitization, it may also be appropriate to decide that some things are more important and therefore require or be deemed to require special attention. And that division between what is important enough to require a high level of human interaction versus the mass digitization is the problem I think most collections face, is deciding not what's important, but deciding that something's less important. But I'm concerned that you have minimized the high value added the human participation in the process can have, that even monitoring 4, 8, or 16, somebody should be giving an ear to these, as Mike Casey showed yesterday, it is to putting an ear to something occasionally will have a really good value add, as well as the automated QA output should be actionable by a human, that every line of that report should be read and those sites should be detected or should be tested. The human should go back and review that to be sure, rather than just sending a printout that you would send to the client or keep with the object. And that's a lot of work, particularly if you're running multiple transfers concurrently. That's not to minimize the high efficiency and the high value that this is presenting, because the truth of the matter, as we all know, is if we want to put a human in front of everything, it's not going to get done. But the ways in which we can differentiate those things that the computers do well and the things the humans do well, that we want to be sure that those human elements are included and that the humans let go, and the notion that there's something that the computers are simply going to do much better than we can, however well trained.
Yes, as far as a lot of information. Yes, I think the workflow Mike Casey showed yesterday works perfect for his need. He has mono materials, he used 3 cassette decks, and he used the spotting every 6 seconds. That's a good approach, but it will not work with stereo material and 8 track machines, 8 machines in one track, or more machines in one go. What we do is we first check for the quality with method 1, the blind detection, and then the operator is listening to the critical sections that method has found, and he can do that at the same time the 8 machines digitize, and that is a very efficient way to do it. So you listen not in a spot, you listen really to the critical part and check that oral. I think it's a better method than to make it blind and rotate it in a blind method all the time.
Well, so they ought to be combined.
Yes, sure. If there's time, it can be combined, and the operator should use the whole time to listen to the material, no question.
I think any further questions on this issue will have to wait till tomorrow. We're very tight for time this afternoon. We had a small technical hiatus at the beginning. Thank you, Jörg, very much indeed.
Thank you.
Before we proceed to the next presentation, can I just remind you that the one following this will be in French, so if you need to equip yourself with suitable earphone equipment, please do so.